give me the flats of dawn with plenty of tailing fish.
And the perfect fly rod.
Yeah!
And get ready for some magic.
What an awesome eat, man! I got one! Oh, damn, I got him, you got it. I got him.
Join Bonefish and Tarpon Trust.
Nice fish.
And help make sure that the magic never ends. Visit tarbone.org to find out how you can help.
Good Monday evening, everybody. I am your host, Charles Levi, also known as Redfish Chuck. And I have a very, very exciting show for you this evening. Joining us tonight will be none other than Aaron Adams, Dr. Aaron Adams, from the Bonefish Tarpon Trust, amongst a ton of other things. We're going to get right to him in just a moment. First things first, let me hit a couple of things that we normally talk about before the show gets started. It is the week. The week has finally arrived for the Old Florida Outdoor Festival. I've been talking about it for a few months now, and we are finally in the staging process. It's a hurry up and wait deal now. So if you haven't made plans to join us out there, there's going to be a pile of stuff going on. All kinds of fishing seminars and trick shooting demonstrations and hunting seminars and ESPN Doc Dogs, and there's food trucks and just a pile of stuff. I know that our good friends from Fishing Florida Radio, Captain Mike Ortego and Steve Chapman and Boudreaux, are going to be there on hand, handing out all kinds of fun goodies. There's a passport program for kids. You show up at their booth, they give you a little passport, you go around to a couple other booths, they stamp it, and then you come back and you win some prizes or something like that. Should be a lot of fun. I'm going to be there all weekend long with Jackson Kayaks. I'll be in the Jackson Kayak booth located down by the lake. Please feel free to stop by. I'll have Drew Gregory with me, along with David Blanding and Brooks. Forgive me, I forget your first name. Or that might be your first name, whatever. One of these days I'll remember everyone's names. So it'll be a lot of fun. Friday early afternoon, however, if you get an opportunity to join us, we're going to be doing a little meet and greet at the Mosquito Creek Outdoors located in Apopka. We should have a really good turnout, expecting about 200-300 people maybe to show up at Mosquito Creek for that. Some of the guys who are going to be doing some fishing demonstrations are going to be there to shake hands and kiss babies and all the fun stuff. So if you can make it, cool. If you can't, no problem. There's a concert that starts off everything Friday night, and that'll be that's Jake Owen. And then the gates open at 6, concert starts at 7. Saturday, the gates open at 10 for all the festivities, and then the concert is Tracy Lawrence at night. I think that starts at 7 o'clock as well, so it should be a good time. And there's a chili cook-off on Sunday, I think, so good stuff. But without further ado, I'd like to welcome my guest, Mr. Aaron Adams, to the show. How are you, bud?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the show.
No, thank you very much for joining us, man. Big fan of everything you guys have going on with the Bonefish Tarpon Trust, and as I had emailed you a couple days ago, it was funny. I was sitting down, and I'm tying some flies. We're getting ready to do a real big trip down to Chokoloskee, and there's about 50 of us kayakers that are going to be down there. And about 50 of us.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. We call them a boondoggle. It's our little camping get-together. It's we try to do one or two of them a year. Kayak Fishing Radio and YakAngler.com are kind of co-hosts for the event, and this will be our largest turnout yet. And I know there's not a spot to camp, sleep, lay your head, nothing in Chokoloskee right now. It's completely booked. And then also, I think I've heard that Everglades City is almost completely booked as well. So it should be pretty crazy. The plastic armada is on its way.
Well, fish beware.
Yeah, right. Let's hope fish beware. But anyway, I was tying some flies the other day, and I was looking, and I've got a couple of reference books, and it just so happened that the book that I was using as reference was one of the ones that you wrote yourself, the Fly Fisherman's Guide to Saltwater Prey. So that was kind of a cool
situation that I was in there. That I'm having you as a guest on the show, and I was reading your book. So, but why don't you tell me a little bit about Bonefish Tarpon Trust? How did you get involved, or how did it all come about? And kind of like the goals that you guys have, and in the research and in the conservation side of things.
Sure. Bonefish Tarpon's Trust started as Bonefish Tarpon Unlimited back in around 1998. Some anglers in the Keys, some guides, became concerned about the decline of bonefish for the most part, but also somewhat tarpon and permit over, you know, the decadal kind of time scale. They're all long-time anglers down there. And so they kind of threw a bunch of money in the hat and first did a couple studies with the University of Miami, you know, perfect location for that. And then, since that small start of a dozen or so guys, they've expanded. I think we have members now from 20 different countries.
Wow.
So, I mean, the basic goal is to find out enough about bonefish tarpon and permit that we can actually advocate for conservation. I mean, it seems kind of silly, but believe it or not, here we are in 2012, and we still don't know a lot of basic stuff about bonefish tarpon and permit. You know, they've never been commercially fished in the U.S., so there's no data. I mean, traditionally, fisheries management data is only collected on fish, you know, after they've been targeted commercially for some time. So we're working at a kind of information deficit. So it's kind of like questions as basic as, you know, if you have to preserve habitat to make sure the juvenile bonefish survive and become adults in the fishery, what do you protect? And believe
right.
it or not, we still don't know the answer to that question. It's frustrating, but at the same time, it's something that's got to be done. And even though recreational fishing is becoming more and more important economically and socially in the U.S. and elsewhere, by and large, you know, fisheries management still hasn't caught up to that. So it's still the kind of information that we're generally not going to get from the management agencies. They just don't have the resources. They're focused on other stuff. So we forge ahead with trying to figure out what we can, and then once we get information, we make sure that we put it into forms that fishermen and resource managers can use, either to become better fishermen or to become better conservationists, or both.
Right. I just actually, this past winter, I started, this past fall, I started catching super small juvenile tarpon on fly in some of the ditches that we have up here in Brevard County. And it's interesting to me that those fish are where they were. And I don't know if this might kind of coincide with the decline of habitat in the Indian River Lagoon as far as, you know, the natural mangrove shorelines that have been, you know, killed off by freeze or what have you. But I'm finding a lot of these little juvenile tarpon really far removed from the Indian River Lagoon system, but in ditches that do eventually connect into it. And so that's kind of one of those things. It's been it's kind of interesting to me to help out with the tarpon DNA research, doing the swabs on their jaws with the little SOS-looking pad deal, and kind of get some of that data in your hands. I guess you're doing that with MOAT, aren't you?
The Tarpon DNA project is a collaboration between MOAT and Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, and we're helping them out by distributing materials, getting the word out, that kind of stuff. You know, it's interesting because those little guys that you're fishing for, you know, let's say they're 12 inches or so, it'll probably be another 8 years or so before they're in the regular fishery. So it'll be really interesting to see as people collect that kind of data on the little guys, how many of them we start seeing in the fishery in years to come. But you kind of back up a second. It's probably worthwhile going through a real brief summary of what we know about the tarpon life cycle. So that'll put a lot of that kind of stuff, what you just described, in perspective about where those little guys, where you're finding them.
Yeah.
To the best that we can tell, based on some limited data, we think that most tarpon spawn offshore. For example, some data were collected a number of years ago that suggested that there was a tarpon spawning location 120 miles or so off the coast of Boca Grande here on the west coast of Florida.
Wow.
And we know that they spawn around the full moon for sure in the late spring and early summer, and maybe some around the new moon. And then when they're spawning offshore, and most marine fish follow this pattern, they do what's called broadcast spawning. Snook, redfish, most of our game fish do the same thing. They don't lay eggs like you might expect a salmon or bass to do in a nest. They get together in mixed groups of males and females and eject the eggs and sperm into the open water. The eggs are fertilized and hatch in, 18 hours or so, and that's it for parenthood. Not much of a parental care type of situation. But those the things that hatch out of the tarpon eggs, the larvae, float around in the open ocean for weeks to months, depending. And so they can come in, depending on what the currents are doing, incredibly far distances from where the adults actually spawn. Or they can just kind of circle around and come back in. For example, in a typical summer, the currents off Boca Grande will sweep most of those larvae back into the Charlotte Harbor area, southwest Florida, anyway. But there have been larvae that have shown up over on the east coast around Stewart that, based on the currents and the age of the larvae, probably came from over here on the west coast.
Wow.
And then when the little larvae are coming into the shallows, they're searching out backwater, stinky, swampy places. And it's amazing how far away from the open ocean and the estuary that they can get, when they're searching out those kind of places. You can go way back into the Everglades, so far back you can barely get there in a kayak and find a little tiny tarpon. When we get those high water in the summer and the rain, so you get a lot of that kind of flooded coastal areas, the pine flatwoods and the ditches get filled and whatnot, those larvae and tiny tarpon can make their way up in there, just like you saw. The question then is, as they grow, can they actually get out of those spots? We know that in some places, golf course ponds are a great example. You can find tarpon. They get up in there, those little tiny larvae, and they can't get out. So it's kind of a one-way trick, which is, as far as contributing to the fishery goes, they never do, unfortunately. One of the things we're working on is trying to do some habitat restoration, which involves connecting those habitats back to the estuary, so we know those little guys can get out. And then as they grow, typically you're going to find after their first year, they're going to be about 12 to 16 inches long. Second year, kind of mid-20-inch range. Third year, 30 inches, a little more than 30 inches, et cetera. The first 5 years, they grow pretty quickly.
Wow.
But they don't get sexually mature until they're on average about 10 years old, which is going to be bigger than 60 pounds typically. So it takes them quite a while to get from that stage that you're fishing them, until they're in what you might call a typical recreational fishery. But my guess is if you sample a bunch of those fish in those ditches you're fishing, and you keep sampling them, you're going to end up resampling the same fish, and maybe a number of times. When they're that small, they seem to stick around, you know, pretty small areas. But then you'll have to keep fishing for another 10 years so you can try and catch it when it's an adult.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. This particular area where we're fishing them is probably a good 2 or 3 miles away from the Indian River Lagoon. And up in this area of the Indian River Lagoon, there is no open water access to the ocean, because we have the Banana River just on the other side of that and Port Canaveral, which has a lock system. So that
right.
was always, that's always been one of those things. I guess maybe they're coming in through the Sebastian area or what have you. But, yeah, pretty interesting. Actually, I'll tell you a funny, real quick funny story. I was down there one day, and there's a gentleman down there, and I can't remember his name for anything, but he's caught. I think he said he was at like 125 samples so far for the year. And
wow.
Yeah, and he does it every day when they're in these ditches. But he gives me this little tiny, like a number 14 size dry fly. And he's like, throw it over here and just wait and see what eats that thing. So I threw it, and I caught a 4-inch tarpon.
Wow.
A 4-inch tarpon. I got a picture of it on my, I think I got a picture of it on my Facebook page, but a 4-inch tarpon. And it was just the most incredible little tiny, like perfect representation of a 120 pounder, just much, much smaller, obviously, and but still, to be that far, you know, removed from the open ocean, I thought that was kind of interesting. Yeah, so.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is that, you know, if you think about all that stuff that those fish are going through, and then you start thinking about, you know, some of the habitat loss that Florida's experienced in the past 50, 60 years, and in some places is still experiencing. Yeah, that's one of the big concerns, is you can't just think about that offshore fish or the larger fish, you know, those kind of backcountry areas that you might not initially think would be important to tarpon are essential. And that's a really big challenge, trying to talk to different resource management agencies and whatnot, is to kind of get them to make those connections. Because if they got up in there, hopefully, like, next summer we get a big wet season, they can find their way back out and end up getting out into the estuary. They're pretty resourceful that way.
So with the Bonefish Tarpon Trust, if somebody wants to get involved, say just an average angler wants to get involved, they can make donations to Bonefish Tarpon Trust, and that will help for you guys to assist you guys in all your research and all that kind of thing. How many, on average, do you know, how many individuals are a part of the Bonefish Tarpon Trust as far as members or donating parties?
Oh, right now our membership is around 1,500. Not as big as you might think. On some of those days that you're out there fishing, you can't seem to find an open spot. you know, we know that 1,500 or so are dedicated to making sure we have fisheries in the future. About 85%, a little more, of the money that comes in goes back out into research and conservation and education, and some of the advocacy that we do as well. So the money's put to good use. We try and keep our administrative costs really low. But yeah, it all goes back right back out into the system. You know, it's interesting that traditionally, or at least originally, the organization was founded by guys who were all fly anglers. But as the group has grown, it's definitely not that anymore. It's pretty well mixed, fly anglers, more and more spin anglers and bait guys as well. Kind of all realize the importance of the fishery. And, you know, the other thing to realize, too, is a lot of people think of Florida as Tarpon Central, but during summer, there's people who fish for tarpon on a regular basis up in the Virginia Eastern Shore, the Chesapeake Bay area. They get tarpon every year. Throughout the Gulf of Mexico, of course. And then a fine friend of mine, there was a mistake, of course, on the angler's part, but a friend of mine told me about somebody up in Rhode Island who hooked into a big tarpon last summer.
Really?
Yeah. Some of the satellite data shows that they can migrate well over 1,000 miles. For example, the Florida Keys up to Chesapeake Bay and back. Going up there for the summer, we think to feed on all the menhaden up there, and then back down into warmer water. Fish have been tracked going from the Mobile Bay in Alabama down to the Keys or Louisiana down to Mexico, Yucatan area.
Wow.
So they get around. Yeah, they really get around, the big one. So you never know. It's kind of the phrase that people have used before is that, our fish are also their fish, which is why we're trying to work as much as we can internationally as well as locally. It all counts, for sure.
Now, with that in mind, the fact that the tarpon travel over those vast distances, that I was never aware that they moved that far north, I came into an interesting scenario in Port Canaveral while trying to catch pinfish to use for bait for groupers offshore. One of my buddies was using a little sabiki rig with some pieces of frozen shrimp and caught a juvenile bonefish all the way up here. And I don't know if that's...
Bonefish, believe it or not, are even a little bit more complicated than tarpon. In the Caribbean and Atlantic, we have one species of tarpon. The only other species of tarpon in the world is over in the tropical Pacific in some places. It doesn't get as big. But for bonefish, in the Caribbean, we've identified, genetics, we've identified three different species on the flat. And the frustrating thing is, for management, is that to us, they look identical. You really can't tell them apart, which is why we have to use genetics to figure that out. And so far, all of the ones that we've caught up in the area that you're talking about are species, the common name is big eye bonefish, and the scientific name is Albula Garcia. We find a lot of those juveniles, really small ones especially, along sandy beaches. How big was the one that you caught?
This one was probably about 8 inches.
Right. That's pretty common. My guess is that it was probably that species Albula Garcia. Now, in the recreational fishery on the flats, like in the Keys or Bahamas, something like 97% of what recreational fishermen catch is a different species called the common bonefish. Its scientific name is Albula vulpes. And that Albula Garcia, the big-eye bonefish, is only maybe 3% or so of the recreational fishery. So it's actually probably a different species of bonefish that you guys were catching.
Wow. And that's not the first time. Go ahead.
There's a third species that seems to be really uncommon, but it does show up sometime. By and large, what you catch on the flats is one species. The stuff that you're catching, like where you are, probably a little bit deeper water, maybe farther north or along sandy beaches, up there is usually another species. But every once in a while, we'll catch one species in the habitat we don't expect it. And there are even times where, and this happened to a colleague, who's over in Grand Bahama fishing on the flats and caught a couple different fish out of the same school and took the fin clip samples for genetics, and there were actually two different species in the same school.
Huh.
That makes it tough for management.
Yeah. That was kind of a shocker to me. And since then, I've heard stories of, several others being caught too. So I guess it is kind of strange, but not quite as strange as I guess we think it is for them to be up here.
Right. And that happens to some extent on the West Coast here as well, especially in the summer. People fishing the passes will, every year somebody will catch a small bonefish. And sometimes it makes the newspaper, all that kind of stuff. You know, with especially warming waters and that type of thing, I suppose it's possible to see bonefish move a little bit farther north. But, you know, just like with snook and tarpon, if they get stuck in water that's too cold, say a bad cold front comes through, that'll knock them back tremendously. So, yeah, I think it'll be an occasional thing, but not a regular thing.
When did you guys add the permit to the species list of things to help to protect and get some more information on? How long ago was that?
Well, there's always been some internal push for permit, you know, getting them on the list. They're one of the big three on the flats. We funded our first study on permit. I'd say that was probably around 2003 or 2004. And then now we're much more involved with permit. You know, we're funding that, conducting that project permit, which is being sponsored by COSTA. That's throughout the state of Florida and now also in Mexico and Belize. It's a large-scale tagging program because we know absolutely nothing about what kind of movement patterns that permit exhibit. We have no idea whatsoever. We've had a couple recaptures. One, the fish was in Biscayne Bay. It was caught and then released and then recaptured, I guess, 2 weeks later, and it was only moved a couple miles. But then there was another fish that was tagged. I think it was tagged in October a year ago, and then recalled in January, and it had moved something like 47 miles. So right now, we're still not quite sure what's going on with the permit and their movements. But we're starting to get more and more interest in funding assistance on permit as well. You know, with all the inshore and offshore movements and coming up onto the flats and all that kind of stuff, it's something that we're really concerned about because there's a lot of pressure on them. And believe it or not, there's virtually no data. For example, in Florida, the state's never, ever done any kind of stock assessment on permit.
Really?
We have no idea how many are out there, no idea how many are getting caught, kept, you know, what the size ranges are in the population, whether they're a lot of old fish or a lot of young fish. I mean, we've got nothing.
Huh.
It's pretty amazing.
That's another fish that we do on occasion get up here off of some of the shallow water wrecks. And I do not as much offshore fishing as I used to, but there's a couple of wrecks that are within eyesight of the beach up here. And on a clear, sunny summer day, you look down, the water's crystal clear. You can see big wads of them just swimming around the wreck. And it's always been one of those things to me. It's just I can't even think about putting a hook in one's face. I just want to sit there and watch them, you know. But
Is that they're out there spawning.
Really?
That's the going theory. Like we know, for example, off the Tortugas, Marquesas, down in Belize, et cetera, they go out on kind of reef edges, reef points, deep water points, and they spawn during the summer. And so the theory is that they're doing the same thing out there on those wrecks up by you. Or even, you know, in wrecks as far north as Tampa.
Wow.
Clearwall. And we have no idea where they come from because they're not there now. But you know, another few months when it's warmer, there's going to be a buttload of permit up to 40 pounds out on those wrecks.
Yeah.
It's a big mystery.
Yeah, it seems to kind of, our permit run, if you call it that, seems to coincide right after our cobia show up here. And it's funny, on every once in a while you'll be, you know, looking for some cobia underneath a big manta ray or something, and below the cobia, below the manta ray, will be like, you know, a dozen or so big permit just swimming right along with them. And it's just weird. It's not something that I guess any of us are really used to seeing or thinking that we should be seeing. You know, it takes a second to clear out your eyes and make sure you're seeing the right thing. It could be Jack Crevel's, but no, sure enough, they're permit.
Right, and by the time you figure it out, they know you're there and you can't get a cast to them and you're not going to eat anyway.
That's right. Well, you know, I've never had luck trying to catch them offshore up here. We don't have a lot of the same prey items that I know of up here that are you know, prevalent down south and in the passes, like some of the pass crabs and that kind of thing off the beach. So it's interesting. Even our cobia up here.
Another thing, no one's ever done a study on what permit eat.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a big giant pompano, right? I mean, I guess it could probably eat a lot of the same things as a pompano. Are they in the same family?
Yeah, they're even the same genus. So they're kind of like kissing cousins, you might say. And that's one reason that, you know, the state managed them together, pompano and permit, until last year, because they look so similar. And I guess there were problems with people identifying them species incorrectly. But one of the things that Bonefish Tarpon Trust pushed was to manage them separately, you know, because pompano are don't get as big, they grow faster, they get mature at smaller sizes. You know, so a lot of the permit that were being kept were you know, only a couple of years old. They weren't even close to being able to spawn. So now the laws are more along the lines of giving them a chance to spawn before, you know, they get harvested, which is a good thing. It's pretty standard practice.
Yeah, I know of a few anglers that fish out of Port Canaveral that harvest a permit every now and again, and it's I don't know. It's just one of those things for me. It's almost like keeping a billfish. It just, man, I don't really get it, you know. But different strokes for different folks. I guess it's legal. Has there been a push to try and make permit one of those species like a tarpon or like a bonefish that you either have to have a special tag to harvest one? Is there a reason? Would there even be a reasoning behind it to try and make such a push?
Well, I guess there's still a decent number of people in Florida who do, you know, keep permit recreationally. You know, as long as it's done in a responsible manner and to not in excess, you know, the population should be able to handle it. And that's one reason we're doing the tagging study in conjunction with FWC so we can figure that out. And there has been some talk about some people wanting to do that, but right now, the state doesn't seem to be in the mood to pursue that, especially with a number of people pushing to keep harvest allowed. But just last year, bonefish was finally made catch and release only. Prior to that, you could actually harvest about one per person per day, I think, in 16 inches.
Hmm.
Strangely enough.
Yeah.
Tarpon, of course, you said, has that kill tag associated with it, which is, what, $50, I think it is now?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's $50, and I don't know. I guess the only reason really to harvest one, if you were to harvest one, would be to see if you can set an IGFA record, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's why most people, if they get them, you know, guides get them, that's usually why they get them, for the world record. But IGFA is also becoming more proactive in, you know, release categories as well. And then, you know, with tarpon, and you can, if you go to the Bonefish Tarpon Trust website, tarbone.org, you can request one. We've got these charts that if you measure the length and girth of a tarpon you catch, this chart has been developed. You can estimate the fish's weight within a pound or two. It's really accurate.
Wow. Are those free for the public to get, or is that one?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And one of the things we do is we try and, as I said before, get as much of our information out. using the philosophy that if fishermen have a better understanding of the fish that they're fishing for, they're probably going to be better conservation stewards as well. So education, yes, is a big key. And then, of course, you know, with the laws in Florida now, you're not supposed to take the fish out of the water without one of those tags. I don't know that's actually ever been enforced. But,
yeah, I was going to say I've seen a ton of pictures of captains with tarpon completely out of the water, and it's, you know, there's actually been a lot of debate on that. And what would be your theory on the health of the fish by removing them from the water? One of the issues that seems to be a common occurrence on some of the fishing forums is the use of boga grips or boga grip style lip grippers, and folks not really supporting the weight of the fish by its belly and the whole thing. I'm curious to know what your theory is on that. Do you think it caught, obviously hanging a fish by his jaw is never a good thing, but do you think it causes the internal damage that some think, or has there been any study on that?
Well, there's a number of different things. Exposure to air is generally bad for fish, and it's gonna vary among the different fish species. But for example, for bonefish, we did a study. We were part of a study that looked at the impact of using boga grips on bonefish. And what we found was that if the bonefish still had, you know, some energy, so that when you put the boga grip in its mouth, it kind of shook, we found some pretty significant tearing in the jaw structure, even actually breaking the jaw on some occasion. And so we pretty much concluded that using any kind of lip gripper on a fish that's still got a bunch of energy is probably not a good idea. And then some colleagues did some work. BTT helped to fund some work on the effect of exposure to air. And they found for bonefish that if the fish was exposed to air for more than 15 seconds, that caused some damage to the gills, and that reduced the fish's chance of survival by something like 6 times.
Wow.
Now for tarpon, it doesn't seem to be as extreme, but like most fish, you know, the critical factors are handling time. So reducing the handling time is very important. And so if the more you handle a fish, the more stress you're causing it, and the less likely it is to survive. And so if you kind of think of, if nothing else, if you think of, say, dragging a tarpon into a boat as handling, then, yeah, that's a bad thing. So we definitely advocate not taking the fish out of the water, you know, for tarpon or for any other fish, really, unless you really want a picture. And people, it's nice to see, are getting creative with their shots of tarpon. So they're getting a lot of boatside shots. Or if they're in an area where they can actually get the angler out of the boat, it's shallow enough, you know, they'll get the angler in the water with the fish, as long as there's no sharks around, of course.
Right.
then for bonefish, you know, there's more and more folks taking pictures with, if not underwater cameras that have that, you know, that are water-resistant, fish still in the water type of thing. And the general rule for things like bonefish or any other fish, really, snook, redfish, would be to, if the fish, even if, let's say you pick the fish up out of the water to take a picture, you support it, you know, under the head and under the belly, if that fish in the picture isn't still dripping water off of it, then it's probably been out of the water too long. And for using photos that people send in on our site or our blog or Facebook, we try to, you know, basically not allow pictures that don't seem like they're proper handling practice. But that makes a big difference.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And it's funny because these are all things that have been brought up on the number of different fishing forums that I'm a part of, and some of my listeners are a part of as well. And, you know, fish handling is a general rule. Obviously, up here, the permit and bonefish isn't really going to ever be an issue, but the tarpon has been in the past, and redfish as well, obviously the bigger fish. But that's good information. It's nice to know that something, some sort of a test has been done on the lip grippers as a whole. I never have been able to bring myself to use them on anything much bigger than maybe a slot-sized redfish, just, you know, if I know I'm going to keep the fish. But
right. I mean, another way to think about it also is, you know, as anglers, you know, there could be a lot of different things that we might be involved in. You know, for example, closed seasons or new regulations to reduce the amount of number of places you can go fishing, or anything other kind of regulations that affect our fishing. If we can cite the fact that, you know, we're showing really good behavior as far as how we interact with the fish and those types of things, gives us a lot more leverage with the resource managers and politicians, et cetera, that, get pressure from other sources as well.
Right.
It's kind of like if we can make our own backyard pretty clean, we're in much better shape in the long run. So if in doubt, err on the side of caution as far as handling the fish.
And we never really got into it. How did you get started in fishing? Have you been fly fishing your whole life, or has it been something you've recently picked up?
I started fishing, I think I was probably 4 years old when I started fishing. I didn't get into fly fishing until early 90s. But I kind of graduated doing such light tackle spin fishing that I might as well have been fly fishing, and fly fishing made a lot more sense. And I got into fly fishing right at the same time I took a job and moved down to the Virgin Islands, lived on St. Croix for a bit. So that was pretty good coincidence to pick up fly fishing at the same time I moved to an island that had some flats. And then, like, you know, most people who pick up fly fishing, they kind of back and forth between spin and fly for a time, and then pretty much, you know, jumped over the cliff and haven't looked back. For me, fly fishing is my preferred method. But I don't let the fact that other people fish other ways as well. It's all good. And I've even progressed to pretty much just sight fishing these days. Not much blind casting or dredging or any kind of that kind of stuff. So you could say I'm really over the edge now.
which would parlay well into the next question I have for you. The TV show. Man, what a great, probably one of my favorite shows since Flip used to have Walker's K Chronicles. Buccaneers and Bones. It airs on Saturdays, I believe, on Outdoor Network.
Outdoor Channel, yeah.
Yep. Are you still a part of that? Or?
Unfortunately, they make me be in it. So I'm no longer anonymous, I guess, as far as people knowing what I look like. But BTT, I mean, it's really fantastic. We get all the benefits from that, and we don't have to pay a penny.
Nice.
The show is, you know, funded by Outdoor Channel and Orion Multimedia that does all the production. All the Buccaneers, the celebrities, they volunteer their time to go out there and do these shows. As you've seen them, they talk a lot about the conservation side as well. They're there for fishing, but they're also there because they really believe in what we're doing. It's been a great boon for us. I mean, it started out as Pirates of the Flats on ESPN2. ESPN, as everybody knows by this point, ESPN Outdoors shut their doors. A lot of their old shows migrated to the Outdoor Channel. Jose Wahedi's show, for example, is on outdoor channel as well. And so they picked us up. We had to change the name to Buccaneers and Bones. So now we're into season two of Buccaneers and Bones, and in April we're going to shoot another season. So
cool.
One more here. And last I heard, all the original guys are going to show up and do it again. So they're obviously having a good time. You know, this year, Tom McGuane couldn't make it for last year. He lives out in Montana, and his ranch was getting badly flooded. You might remember all the flooding out there.
Yeah.
So he didn't really make it for this year, but assuming we don't, he has to get more flooding. I just saw him the other day. He plans on being in the next season, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, that's cool. It's really fun to watch, or actually just to listen to Tom Brokaw talk about fishing, and it's kind of a trip, you know, from listening to the guy talk about news for years and years and years, and hearing him have this passion for catching bonefish, and Michael Keaton as well, obviously Lefty Cray being the legend that he is, and the other guys that are involved with the show. It's probably my favorite show now that's on television since Flip had his show. So
that's great to hear. And I think Flip might do some stuff with us next year as well. I'm not sure. But, you know, the thing is, that's Tom Brokaw's real voice. He's not putting on a stage voice. that's how it is. Natural.
That's funny. Yeah, you know what? You guys have done such a great job of getting a cast of characters together that really kind of mold well and kind of blend with each other and feed off each other. It seems it's a very organic kind of a thing going on with the show, and that's something I feel that a lot of the shows are lacking. And as you said, the conservation side of things that's constantly being talked about is a really nice breath of fresh air for us that are conservation minded. And with that going back now to you have your own website. It's Fisherman's Coast, correct?
Yeah, I got a couple websites actually. I just stopped sleeping to do all this stuff. But yeah, fishermanscoast.com is my personal website, and that focuses on, basically translating, you know, the science I do, fish ecology, into terms that can help anglers. So trying to basically understand what makes the game fish tick so you can be more likely to be in the right place at the right time with the right fly or lure, what have you. And that's, I think I've had that website probably about 5 years, I believe. It's hard to remember. But, yeah, there's all kinds of information on there. I would challenge anybody to go on that website and read everything in one sitting. There's a lot of stuff there. So a lot of it's based on my book, the one you mentioned, the Fly Tying book, and the one that preceded it called Fisherman's Coast, which tries to take all that ecology information and put it in fisherman's terms. And then I more recently started a second one called Tribal Bonefish that's about trying to motivate the anglers to get involved in conservation and support responsible fishing behavior, those types of things, because we certainly need it. I'm sure especially some of the kayakers, everybody's got a story about getting run over out there by someone who doesn't quite know how to behave on the water.
Yeah, I've got a few.
There's a group in Texas that's been fighting that fight for quite some time that I interacted with a bit a couple of years ago. So it's a lot about education and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm a big, big fan of education, especially for the younger generation. I'm the father of two boys, my oldest being 2.5. And I'll tell you this, and you probably won't believe me, but he's already caught a tarpon on a fly rod.
Nice.
Yeah, just a little ditch tarpon, not much bigger than maybe 13 or 14 inches. But with a little bit of assistance from Dad, he got it on a 6-weight, so that was pretty cool. But reeled it in himself. I helped him to cast the fly out. I mean, it's basically just a 10-yard shot right off the end of a culvert pipe where some water was coming into this little estuary. And got the pictures and everything to prove it, man. But, yeah, I'm hoping that everything that you guys are doing and the things that we can do as just ordinary anglers will help to protect what we have now, or if not even make it better for that generation. I think that's really, really important. I've seen a decline here on the Space Coast from back in the days when there used to be gill netters in the intercoastal, all the way to the point to now where there's no more netters in the intercoastal and the fish are just absolutely everywhere. So it's definitely bounced back here, and it can only get better. So kudos to you guys for everything you guys have going on, for sure.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, you know, we're the, as recreational anglers, we're the primary users and beneficiaries of their coasts at this point in the game. So I think we've got a responsibility to make sure it sticks around, like you said, especially for the kids. But not only for the kids. I mean, when I was growing up, you learn how to fish from, you know, your dad or your uncle or whatnot. You know, I think a lot of people now are getting into fishing without the benefit of that type of training. And so we can help them, too. There's some, let's call them older kids out there, that can benefit as well. And, you know, I've noticed that as people learn more about the fish they fish for and the habitats and everything, they just naturally become more concerned about making sure that stuff sticks around so they and their kids can have the same experience in the future.
Very cool. So now that we're kind of through the hardest part of doing these boondoggles, these camping trips that we do, is trying to prepare for them. And now that we're through the hardest part of getting prepared for a boondoggle, which is the wait, we're going down to Chokoloskee the 17th through the 20th of this month. We're all excited. Like I say, my fingers are bleeding from tying so many flies, and I know a lot of the folks that are going to be joining us are also fly fishermen, and obviously you being kind of a fly aficionado of yourself, what would you recommend if you can give us a little bit of advice? What would you recommend? A, we either tie or where should we fish in a kayak outside of Chokoloskee, and what should we be throwing? Can I ask you that?
Oh, God, there's so many choices. I mean, it's interesting. We're getting, I don't know about you, but we're getting a decent amount of rain here today because of that system that's down off the Keys. And depending on how much water that dumps in, if you get a bunch of fresh water coming out, it may be worth paddling up inside a bit and seeing if you can't find some snook looking, you know, in those fresh water places where fresh water is coming out and pushing some bait. As warm as it's been, there's a very good chance that you guys are going to run across some tarpon down there. I know over here in Southwest Florida, there's tarpon starting to show up already. I heard it in the Keys as well, so I'm sure that you guys will run across some tarpon. Some of those places that have some deep holes and some access to, you know, some of those channels might hold some tarpon. You can drag your butts out of bed extra early after all the partying the night before. Dawn's always a good time to find those rolling tarpon in there, you know, usually pretty ready to eat at that time. And as far as flies, I've got it on my site, that Fisherman's Coast pattern and everything. There's one of my favorites is called the Mangrove Muddler. It's basically a deer fur version of the muddler in brown with gold, but also white works really well down there in that. For snook and red, it works really well. And then good colored flies for a lot of that water, black and purple works well. If it's really tannin stained, get a lot of fresh water coming out, you know, yellow often works pretty well. So, and then again, if you come across, and you learn this from your buddy and those little fish, you come across a juvenile tarpon, don't be afraid to put on some surface stuff like a gurgler. You know, when they're that small, they eat a lot of different stuff, including insects. In some of the studies we've done, we've pulled tree frogs out of stomachs of snook and tarpon.
Really?
Yeah, the little guy is way back up in there. So, you know, you get some good weather, those gurglers are really good choice as well.
Man, you're getting our blood pumping. I'm looking in the chat room, and people are getting super excited about it. Hey, if you got nothing going on, man, during the 17th through the 20th, feel free to pop on by. We're open to everybody. If you got a kayak, that's great. If you don't, I'm sure we've got plenty of them that'll be down there. Feel free to join us. It'd be an honor to have you to paddle along with us.
Thanks. We're having a fundraiser in Naples that week on Saturday night. So we'll see how that goes, but it's a possibility. I've got a Perception of Bimini kayak, so it's certainly a possibility. And considering that the outboard on my flats boat right now is the carburetor strewn on the workbench, that might not be ready by then.
Yeah, it's never a good sign. Well, man, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on the show and everything that you guys are doing with Bonefish Tarpon Trust. It's a great organization, and if there's anything that we can do as kayakers or as this group, Kayak Fishing Radio, yakangler.com, to help you guys in any way as far as gathering data and that kind of thing. I know most of us are in regions where we're going to be able to find some of these fish. You know, we're more than happy to do so, and, you know, keep us in mind. Anytime you guys have something going on, you want to talk about it. We've actually got 5 shows that run on Kayak Fishing Radio Network. Most of those shows being done a little bit further north than me. We've got a show that's done on Tuesday nights, the Lozier family that are up in Virginia Beach, and then right there in your old neck of the woods, fishing the Chesapeake and such. And then Wednesday night we've got Mark Wheeler, who's doing the Chesapeake area as well, a lot more freshwater stuff. Thursday night, Chip Gibson is kind of our godfather, so to speak, of our network. He's the guy that started this whole crazy thing that we've got going on, and he's out of Atlanta, Georgia. And then Friday nights, we've got a show all the way out of California. So we're kind of spread out a little bit. And like I say, man, anytime you guys have something you want to promote or anything that needs awareness raised, feel free to get in touch with us. We'll be more than happy to have you on the show. It's been a true honor to have you as my guest tonight, and I can't thank you enough for being here.
Yeah, thanks for the coverage. And, you know, for people who listen, who fish for a Bonefish Tarpon or permit, you know, joining up and becoming a member and then helping out as we, you know, send out different posts when we need help is fantastic. And for people who aren't in areas, you know, where they're going to fish for tarpon, bonefish, and permit as their bread and butter, like up in the Chesapeake Bay, you know, there's conservation groups up there that are working to protect the fish and the habitat just as hard as we are. And, you know, there's really no excuses. If you don't get involved, I mean, my mantra is no whining.
Yeah.
You either do something about it or shut up. And there's, you know, there's challenges everywhere. I grew up on Chesapeake Bay, and I hate to say it, but I know what it used to be like. And there's still some good spots, but, you know, it's not like it was back then. So, yeah, you know, get involved, however that may be, however unsexy that might be, get involved.
Well, let me ask you this, kind of unrelated to the tarpon, bonefish, and permit, and but more so geared towards the conservation. This is an issue that has got us ocean fishermen just stumped. The red snapper closure that has taken over the southeast of the United States kind of by storm. You having the marine biologist background, what's your theory on that? Why, you know?
Well, from what I can tell, I mean, I haven't done really any offshore fishing in since I've left the Caribbean, but from what I can tell on the periphery, you know, according to the data that National Fisheries Service has, they seem to indicate that there's a problem in the reef fishery. And, yeah, I'm not sure how much of it's a red snapper per se or other fish that are caught when you go fishing for red snapper. And one of the problems is that if you pull up fish from too great a depth, you know, its chance of surviving if you let it go aren't so hot. So, and again, this is my understanding from the periphery, is that one of the issues is catching other stuff. I think some of the folks are concerned about population size, but that's kind of something I haven't become too involved in. You can only do so much.
Yeah, no, well, then there's no doubt that you've got a lot on your plate, writing books and helping out with magazines and the show and Bonefish Tarpon Trust and your numerous websites. But man, I can't thank you enough for being here. And hopefully we get to see you down there in Chokoloskee. That'd be awesome to be able to fish with you.
Yeah, I'll definitely try to get down there. No promises though, but we will send the guys who are going to some of the BTT info. We put out an annual magazine. Some other stuff, and that just came out last week, so they'll get some stuff hot off the press.
Very cool. We'll definitely appreciate that, and there's definitely going to be extra kayaks available, man. So if you're doing your charitable event on Saturday and you don't feel like toting your kayak with you or whatever, feel free to just stop on by. We'll have extras.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks for the offer.
Absolutely, and thank you very much for joining me, man. I appreciate it. You're more than welcome to stick around if you want. I got another few minutes of some things we're going to talk about, but plug real quick. Go ahead and plug the Bonefish Tarpon Trust website and real quick explain to folks how they can get involved in donating.
Sure. The website for Bonefish Tarpon Trust is tarbone.org. It's short for tarpon bonefish. Got a lot of information on there, a lot of stuff I talked about. We've got a blog as well, which is blog.tarbone.org. Becoming a member is easy, and we've even got a new thing going on for people who want to become new members. At $50, membership goes from $50 and up, but at the $50 level, you get entered in automatically in a raffle every month, a different thing. This month it's Haller Brothers have some pretty cool gear. Next month it's Cheeky Fly Fishing. There'll be some Orvis gear. And then the grand prize at the end of the grand raffle, I should say, at the end of the year is going to be a trip to Ascension Bay Bonefish Lodge.
Oh.
Yeah, for two people.
Wow.
That's sweet. I haven't been to Ascension Bay yet. Maybe I'll have to quit being director and join up as a $50 member. That's a really good trip. And then we also got something, if people are already members, we'll have some raffles throughout the year. But right now, the big raffle that will occur in December, it'll be a trip, a week-long trip for two to Pescamaya Lodge in Mexico. And that's going to be really cool because Costa Del Mar Sunglasses is sponsoring that. So the winner goes, gets to take somebody, and then they go along with a couple of the execs from Costa Sunglass.
Wow.
We'll probably bring along some pretty cool swag as well.
I would imagine so. That's awesome. So,
not all, you know, boring membership stuff. There's some pretty cool incentives in there, too.
Very cool. So everyone listening live and guys in the chat room, take some time and go check out the Bonefish Tarpon Trust at tarbone.org. Become a member, $50. Look at that. You're automatically entered into winning some pretty awesome stuff and amazing trips. And I promise that if I win a trip, none of you guys are invited. But again, man, I thank you very much for joining us, man. It's been great, and I think you've answered a lot of questions that a lot of us have had for a while, and we look forward to talking to you again here soon.
Sure, for sure. And if you collect more questions on the forum, you get enough for another show, just let me know. This is great. I've probably tied a dozen tarpon flies while we're talking.
I'm jealous, man. I'm sitting in front of the computer screen, and my vise is like 15 feet away, and I can't get to it. So, good job. But awesome. Well, again, thank you, and we'll hopefully we'll speak with you soon.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right, buddy.
All right.
So how was that? That was awesome.
Tag. You're supposed to tag. It was awesome, man.
Dude.
That was a bit of all right there.
That guy is a wealth of knowledge. Just unbelievable. I could do like 7 shows and not cover everything.
That's cool, man. Nice job.
Yeah, I can definitely see having him on talking about the northern stock of tarpon up here in Virginia.
Good gracious.
Yeah. There's no tarpon up there.
Exactly. Yeah. There are no tarpon.
Those are just big shad.
They're really big menhaden fish.
A really big shad. Yeah, yeah, the giant menhaden.
Ladyfishzilla.
That's what Trey's tarpon looked like when he caught it, man. The way he's holding it in the picture, it looks like a giant like pilchard or something. But cool, very cool. So let's see, we've got we're less than 2 weeks away from the boondoggle, folks. Those of you that are going to join us. Super excited about it. Even more so excited about it now after that. I haven't tied
all those colors, man. Did you get those colors written down?
Yeah, trust me. I haven't gotten any gurglers tied, so I guess that's the next thing to do. That was awesome.
Gurgler.
What's that?
A podcast.
Yeah, just rerun it.
Dude, telling you. Yeah, that was cool. That was really awesome. But cool. If you guys aren't already aware, and I don't know how you can't be, the Boondoggle is down in Chokoleskee, the 17th through the 20th. The Chokoleskee Island Park is booked solid. There is not a spot to be had. And from what I understand, sounds like Everglades City is getting to be about the same way. It's a combination of snowbirds and all of us crazy kayakers that are going to be down there. So if you have not gotten a spot and you want to get a spot, I would suggest looking into calling first thing in the morning to any of the lodges in Everglades City or hotels and see what you can't find. My buddy Chris was able to find a room as of 2 days ago. So, but even the place that he called had to wait and see if they were going to have a vacancy available for him. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Bring all your gear. I'll have a couple extra fly rods with me in case anybody wants to try and tackle some fish on fly. You have to fill out a credit application before you're allowed to touch any of my equipment. And I need a credit card and a driver's license and your blood type and your firstborn. But
no, you'll have to wait 6 months for the fly.
Yeah, you have to wait 6 months for the fly. I'll give you you can hold the rod in your hand, but you're not allowed to cast it near the trees. No, I'm just kidding. But if you don't have gear for shark fishing, I think that's going to be one of those things that we're going to do probably every night we're there. I don't see why not. And I think we've all kind of come to the conclusion that we're going to nominate Rob as the guinea pig to paddle all of our baits out to these sharks.
Do they have dock lights down there?
I don't know if they do or not. Haywood, he's not in the room. I don't know.
No, he's busy celebrating.
Oh, that's right, celebrating his birthday. Happy birthday, Haywood. Hold on. Let me see if I can find a cool soundbite for him for his birthday. No, I'm not fast enough. Where's Chip when I need him? Oh, well. There we go. Here we go. Some gangster stuff you just played. Anyway, so yeah, there you go. That's what we have going on. Yeah, boop. That's what we have going on. We've got the Rob. That's what Rob's gonna hear. But what Rob doesn't know is as he's paddling out that bait, I'm going to have like a 2-foot-long ladyfish tied to the bottom of his kayak with a 100-pound mono.
That's
Rob, do you hear what he's saying, man? Rob's in there.
For those of you that didn't see the picture Rob posted on Facebook, he posted a picture of a garden hose. And in his description of the garden hose, he talks about how he's going to fill the bottom of my kayak full of water during the night. And
the bottom?
The whole
bottom.
So if that's the case, there will be Jack Crevels and Ladyfish tied to the bottom of his kayak. I might even super glue them there so he doesn't know they're there when he launches.
You didn't notice that you have a threaded garden hose attachment on your Jackson there. You think it's a scupper plug, but really it's a garden hose attachment. Special feature for the Redfish Chuck Edition Jackson Cuda right there.
I guess I'll have one of those after the boondoggle. You'll probably install one for me during the nighttime. But that's funny. But anyway, and again, this weekend, guys, big, big deal. The Old Florida Outdoor Festival, Captain Mike Ortego and the guys from Fishing Florida Radio are going to be there. I'll be there. There'll be a pile of other folks there. Blair Wiggins is supposed to be doing some talking. There'll be Mark Sosin, I think, will be there. There's a pile of people that are going to be there. If you do not have tickets and you're going to be down here in time and you want to go, send me an email and say, hi, I'd like to go to the Old Florida Outdoor Festival, and I'll see what I can do about getting you some tickets for the Outdoor Festival. That was also generously donated from Fishing Florida Radio guys. And real quick, I want to go over, I've been meaning to do this. There's a list of sponsors that have really stepped up and kind of helped out with our free raffle we're going to put on down at the boondoggle. So let me go over those companies real quick if my computer wants to work with me, because I can't remember them all off the top of my head. We got Harry Goods Outdoor Shop located down in Melbourne, Florida. Those guys are going to be donating something, Richard and the crew. Appreciate those guys. Tackle webs from Captain Mike Ortego. I know Mike's going to give me a tackle webs to give away, so look for that. Steve Chapman, also with Fishing Florida Radio, is kind of helped me to find some other things outside the box that I think will be really fun for prizes. Bonefish Tarp and Trust are going to send us down some stuff to give away. Bug Life Fly Fishing Apparel, they're going to be sending me a bunch of stuff down. Hooked One, Chad Hoover stepped up, and he's going to be donating three $25 gift certificates to Hooked One. Florida Sportswoman is donating some stuff as well. Florida Sportsman has donated a pile of things. I don't know if you guys saw that, a couple of videos, a couple of books, and a bunch of magazines and a tackle selection. Mount This Fish Company has stepped up and donated some shirts and some hats. And some stickers. We got Pure Fishing's giving us a bunch of stuff. Elusive Tales Clothing Company, they're going to donate some stuff to us as well. Flytooth Flyline is sending down a fly line for me to give away to somebody. And if you should just so happen to be pulled for that particular prize and you're not a fly fisherman, just say so when you walk up to pick up your prize, and we'll give you something different. Captain Mark Wright stepped up and gave us some Exude baits to give away. The Lozier Clan has given us a pile of stuff to give away as well. Reaction Innovations has given us a bunch of plastics to give away. Bending Branches has given us a bunch of swag to give away, Bending Branches paddles. Heroes on the Water sending us down some stuff to pass out as far as information on the club and how to get involved, and some stickers as well. And BloodyDex.com is giving us a bunch of koozies and stickers as well. So I just picked up another donator, and let me see if I can find it real fast. Thai Guys Lures from Facebook. I found the guy on Facebook. He makes what looks like musky lures and pike lures, inline spinnerbait type things, and I think it would work out pretty well for fishing in the salt as well. So he's excited. He's going to be sending us a bunch of stuff as well too. So, and I've got my feelers out for a bunch of other things. So look for that. It'll be fun. We'll probably look to do that. What do you think, Chip? Maybe Tuesday? Maybe Saturday night?
As much stuff as you got, we're probably going to have to do them hourly.
Yeah. It's growing. I've got unconfirmed commitments from I think several other manufacturers. So my real goal is to try and get those kids that are going to be there some combos to give away. That would be awesome. But we'll see. I've got a little over a week to make that happen. But real quick, safety. Guys, we were talking about it on Chip Show with the Malone Trailer folks. Be careful when you're making this trip down. Make sure you strap and double strap and super glue and do whatever it is you need to do to keep your boats attached to your vehicles or your trailers. We don't need anybody to lose a boat and hurt themselves or injure somebody else for lack of due diligence when you're loading up all your stuff, getting ready to come down. I know you guys, some of you guys are coming from pretty far away, so let's try and make this a safe event. Also, too, think about, as we discussed before, having a VHF radio, at least be in a group, hopefully with somebody who has one in case you guys should get lost. It wouldn't hurt to bring a GPS along with you as well if you're out in the open water. I think you'll do better than being back up in the canopy, but some sort of a signaling device or a calling device, whether it be a VHF or definitely have your whistle. You have to have that per Florida law, or a sounding device. I'm probably going to have a small little air horn with me as well, just to wake up Rob in the middle of the night after he fills my boat full of water. And that's pretty much it. Awesome. It was a good show, man. I appreciate Aaron Adams joining us tonight. That was really cool. And thanks everybody for sticking in there and listening to the show and participating in the chat room. Had a pretty good cast of characters in here tonight. So, Mark, what are you working on right now as far as last-minute details for the boondoggle and packing things up? I know we were talking prior to the show, and your kidneys are about to give out from pouring lead. So what's on the agenda now?
Well, I'll just let everyone know that everyone will receive a handful of jigs when they get down there. We will lose stuff. That's why you have extras. So don't, buy some jigs, but don't go too crazy, folks. Right now it's, tying a few bucktails, because I know that's key in those deeper drop-offs, tying more rigs, because we got people that, have never fished, for sharks and stuff like that, so this way I can just hand them out, as we're sitting on the dock. I'm actually working, with Irish Water Dogs to get some swag, too.
Sweet.
And, Columbia Sportswear.
Sweet. So. Yeah, anybody out there listening, man, if you're going to be joining us and you're sponsored by a company I didn't mention that we're already getting stuff from, the more the merrier. And I think one of the things that we should probably try and do to show our appreciation for this so that in future endeavors we can get just as big of a turnout as far as prizes are concerned would be to take like a giant group picture. I know I'm going to have camera down there. I know Haywood will have his camera down there, but get all of us together. If there is indeed 40 or 50 of us, it'll make for a pretty cool picture and send out, one of those to each one of the companies that donated something. I think they would appreciate that. Just a little sign of good faith, But, feel free. Anybody that owns a company that might want to get involved, I'll take anything we can get at this point. Stickers, hats, shirts, whatever. Especially for the kids, I really want to try and make an emphasis on getting a pretty good selection of stuff for the kids. So let's try and do that. Rob, what do you got going on, man? Are you gonna be fishing at all between now and then, or are you just kind of boondoggling it up, like waiting for it to happen?
No, man. I should get out this weekend. Everything looks promising so far, so we'll see.
Cool.
Should happen Sunday.
Awesome. Do you have any last-minute suggestions on things for people to bring? We'll go over it again the Monday after the outdoor festival. One thing real quick. Sorry, I almost forgot. I'm going to have a special guest from Penn or from Pure Fishing joining me on Monday night, this upcoming Monday. So look for that. He is the Florida rep for Pure Fishing, so that'll be interesting. And I heard a rumor that he might be giving away a Penn Battle on my show. I don't know if that's true or not, but I heard a rumor, so you might want to tune in for that. So, but I'm sorry to interrupt you there, Rob. What else you got going on?
No, you're okay. Nothing. That's about it. I think we covered a whole lot of stuff for – oh, what you want to look at is on yakangler.com, we have started a – Mark started a food list. Saturday is our big potluck, so we're starting a list, so we don't have like Mark said, 14 different kinds of potato salad, which I actually like. So I like potato salad, so that's okay with me. But no, if you're bringing something, if you're going to the boondoggle and you don't know what to bring for the potluck, check it out.
Very cool. Good deal. Chip, what do you got going on Thursday night on your show, man? Chip?
We're going to talk about lures and... Oh, we'll probably talk about the possibility of boondoggle video and what we'd like for folks to contribute and what they'll get in return for contributing to the boondoggle video. So, but yeah, we'll be doing that. And then the Thursday before the boondoggle, we'll have Yak Sushi Live in the ATL KFR studios. So, which should be a fun time. So,
oh, very cool. As he makes his trek from Kentucky, stopping every hour on the hour to fill up with gas.
Yeah, probably.
I'm gonna try. Hey, real quick, I'm gonna try to bring an external hard drive so I can. If I know Stan is bringing his Mac, and Chip probably will too. I don't know, but. I'm trying to compile, get all of the footage together from everybody's GoPros and then be able to edit something up. So that's my plan anyway. I'm going to try it. I know I can get a terabyte for about $90 or so. That ought to be able to get everybody's footage.
You're speaking Spanish to me, brother. I don't know what that means.
That's huge. It's like 2,500 gig external hard drives, and you put those together and you got a terabyte. Sorry.
Cool.
Excuse me. Well, let me take off my hipster glasses.
Just dumb it down for me, bro.
Take off my Clark Kent wig.
Greg Becker.
Sir.
What do you have going on, buddy?
Well, instead of fishing this past weekend, I wound up not fighting the wind and then fixing cars all day Sunday. Not sure if next weekend is going to work out, but I'm thinking I might just have to save my strength. I'm just so much looking forward to getting down there and getting out. So save the elbow and save the shoulder and abuse it down there.
I volunteer to tow you around if you need it, buddy.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you very much.
No problem. Cool.
And I have a special tow bungee from actually a couple different ones to try. So, you know, actually, not for nothing, we may actually try that. I was hoping to have tried it with Robert and try this out. But talking to my buddy at Yak Gear, he sent me a couple different options to try after Greg posted his, tie a bungee in the rope and it won't yank your head off. Post a while ago on yakangler.com, and a bunch of us saw the sunbeam come down from the heavens and land on his head and said, gee, what a great idea that is. So we'll give that a shot and get some feedback back.
You guys are crazy in the chat room. Well, that's awesome, Becker. And I'll be more than happy to be the test paddler for you. That'd be cool. I'll be interested to see how that goes. Remember, of course, bring plenty of things to drink, adult-wise and or water. Be responsible. Don't get all crazy and goofy and fall in a campfire, and we'll just turn you into shark bait. I'm sure that Chip's gonna I can't even do it. All right. Sorry, Rob. I'm throwing you underneath the bus. The other night, I'm on the phone with Rob, and we're talking, and Rob had the best Chip impression ever. And he talked about Chip's gas tank full of sweet water, and it was just the funniest thing I ever heard in my entire life. So I don't know if Rob's going to bust out into his best Chip invitation down there in Chekalovsky, but look for that, I guess. Hi, Rob.
Yeah, I'll probably bust that out at some point down there.
All in good fun, Chip. All in good fun.
I'll run over his fishing rods, man. I'll run over his fishing rods.
You already did that. Like no, Scott did that last boondoggle.
Oh wow! But anyway, I can't wait, man. We're gonna have a great time down there. I can't believe how many people are signing up to be there. So it's gonna be a lot of fun. Cool. Well, with that, I'm almost to my. I've got 3 minutes and 6 seconds left per the clock on the screen. So let me wrap this thing up. I'd like to personally thank my sponsors, and that's Jackson Kayaks, Yeti Coolers, Tackle Webs, Captain Mike Ortego, you're my boy. And, who else do I have that I need to remember? Anybody else? That's that it, really?
Bending Branches.
Ah! Damn it. Bending Branches paddles. They are coming through, and I almost forgot them. How in the world do I do that? They are coming through with a pile of swag. They got some kayak sponges they're sending down, and all kinds of stuff. So it'll be really, really cool. What else? Bloody Dex. Yep, bloodydex.com. BD Outdoors. If you guys are not members of BD Outdoors, please do so. In the little space down at the bottom of your sign up area, it'll say who sent you. Please tell them I did. I would appreciate it. And of course, make sure that you check. What's that? Oh, boy. Make sure that you check out yakangler.com, your ultimate kayak fishing resource. If it wasn't for Mark and Adam, I don't know that Chip would have ever started this whole crazy thing that we have going on here and doing the boondoggle. So kudos to those guys. Good people. That's pretty much it, man. Thanks very much for everyone listening. And again, thank you very much, Aaron Adams, for calling in. That was truly an honor to speak to you, my man. And hopefully he'll show up and he'll fish with us. How cool will that be? That
would be awesome.
Yeah, it would be awesome. 90 seconds. All right, I'm off here. All right, everybody. Good night, tight lines, smooth seas and intercoastal waterways and such. And Trey and Logan, please go to sleep tonight. I really need to sleep. Y'all take it easy. We'll talk to you again next week. See ya.
Later.